same way as you read it on this, in that, for instance, in Southeastern, the balance is pretty good, in my estimation, between, and what we're really talking about here, in my estimation, is kind of a protection of the Cape mixed stock fisheries policy versus the minimal escapement policy, in which you manage for the weakest runs and so forth. And actually, I think the management policies of the state have been somewhere in between those two. And while some Cape fisheries have been affected on this, they deserve to be affected because of, as I say, the changes in the fisheries themselves. The fishermen themselves, bigger boats, more powerful boats. And I remember prior to statehood, purse seine vessels in southeastern Alaska, for instance, you know, a purse seine skiff was a about a 16-foot boat with a six-cylinder gray gas engine in it, you know. Now the skiffs, you know, that they drag those seines with, you know, they've got a bigger engine in them now than the main propulsion unit in the seine boat. Yeah, their ability to hold gear in the straits and in the tides and so forth, the fishermen have adapted to that, and that's great. But they can't expect to have a set situation under those circumstances. Once, when his efficiency changes, then the management program has to adjust for that. We saw expansions of the Cape fisheries in the state during the 70s and the 70s and the 80s, especially on this. We saw intercept fisheries developing, moving out of the terminal areas. And again, that's fine. There's a quality value that's associated with those fish and so forth. But you got to remember that, you know, you may be catching somebody else's fish, and at that point, that's where the flexibility comes in terms of the board, the public process that goes with the board.
I think that's fine, Mr. Chair. I kind of got the flavor. He's following the answers that the Commissioner Duffy gave, so.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for all the sentence that you said that sort of caught my ear was, just early on, you said the resource will ultimately lose under this bill. And I guess I want to follow up and see why. Here's my main question, but then I just want you to elaborate on the statement you made and give me examples of how. I know that there are places throughout the state where there are minor wild salmon stocks, but that are important, maybe not as important economically to one group or another, but are important. And I think, for example, on the Kenai River, we've done an amazing job. I think the state has done an amazing job protecting a very minor winter run of silver salmon that economically is a zero to the community, but means something to other people. And I'm wondering if you feel that wild fish stocks that are not, do you see any detrimental impact on this bill to wild fish stocks that are worthy of protecting in your view, but that aren't dominant economically, I guess?
Well, I guess, Mr. Chairman, I guess my response to that would be that ultimately it comes down to the implementation of whatever is specified here. On this, if we're looking for stability, and that would probably be the argument as I see it, and everybody would like to have stability as far as their business is concerned, but in the fish business, I don't think that's really a real possibility on this. So, I guess my feeling would be that I lost my train of thought here. I'm sorry. I apologize. But would you restate the question on that?
The first question, I guess, is...
The first question was in regard to loss of resource.
Representative Guerra, go ahead.
Sure. Here are the two questions. One is just generally your statement about your fear for the resource, health of the resource. But before you get to that, I guess I'm trying to sort out whether this bill as written might have a detrimental impact on wild fish stocks that aren't dominant fish stocks.
Mr. Chairman. Yes, I think that it would, and the reason I say that is because of the implementation of this. You will have different views as far as the board is concerned. You will have different views as far as the commissioner is concerned over time on this, and because of those changes, I mean, you're not going to have the. I don't think you're going to have the consistency that you would like to. That the group that has put this forward, in fact, would like to see, because the implementation is ultimately where, you know, what's going to affect the resource. And it's if we have a very political situation within the board or within the department on this, then you could see decisions being made that would, in fact, negatively impact, you know, minor stocks on this. And as such, it's that cumulative production of all of the systems in the state that, in fact, puts us up there at 140 million fish or 150 million fish or wherever we're at the present time. King salmon stocks, for instance, in Cook Inlet. The rebuilding process on that took over 10 years to rebuild the king salmon stocks in Cook Inlet. When we started out, it was a typical situation. You know, there was a lot of old king salmon spawning areas that, in fact, were not being utilized. You still had kings in the king in the Kenai and the major systems. But you'd lost the production of king salmon from all of the smaller systems within Cook Inlet. And it wasn't until you started to get that production from those units that you began to see recovery of the stocks in Cook Inlet. As far as the, okay.
Carl, yeah. I want to, if you don't mind, just clarify.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see anything in this bill that mandates, do you, that the director or the commissioner overharvests weak stocks, do you? I mean, there's nothing in this. So, I mean, if you have the political situation where the Board of Fisheries changes so that they're going to allocate differently, I mean, those are the situations that you're talking about where you have a commissioner that says, I'm going to harvest every fish in the state, they could expend that kind of energy right now, and the Board of Fish could do those allocation decisions based on those kind of criteria right now, regardless of this. But, I mean, you don't see that happening with the legislature letting that happen either, do you?
I would hope not.
Yeah.
And Representative Guerra, I had the second question here.
Through the chair. That was just the general statement you made earlier on that your fear that that this would ultimately have a detrimental impact on the resource in general.
Yes. Well, again, that comes down to the implementation, and my guess is that if this type of approach is taken in terms of management of the fisheries, once you take that step, you will have many suggestions for additional amendments, additional activity by the legislature in terms of assuring this stability that everyone is looking for. Ultimately, the politics of the thing becomes a wave much larger than just the conservation of the resource. And from my standpoint, I don't think that's a desirable thing.
One follow-up, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra.
I'm just one aspect of what Representative Seaton asked you, and that was perhaps maybe the relative harvest levels might not have a long-term detrimental impact the way they're dictated by this bill. But I guess is it possible from a biological standpoint that in order to sustain the maximum yield of a dominant fish stock, that you might do so by impacting the spawning area or habitat of a minor fish stock, like let's say silvers on the Kenai or some other? Is there any danger there?
Well, there's always danger, and you have to, the management people have to make up their minds in terms of, what risk they're in fact dealing with, while during the in-season management. But for instance, early and late run fish, there's an overlap, for instance, in many stocks where there's an early segment and a late segment. You want a chunk of your escapement out of both of those on this thing. And when you nail them, hard with continuous fishing time and this type of thing, then the risk is higher that you're in fact going to knock some lesser fish down, lesser stocks down. And from not always, but the risk is there. And that, of course, is one of the reasons that you want this flexibility in your management program. And just because people go and demonstrate in the streets of whatever community here on this thing, you have to take the give the benefit of doubt to the resource. And if you ever move away from that policy of giving the doubt to something other than the resource, then you're not going to maintain the kind of salmon stocks that we've got in the state at the present time.
Thanks. Any other questions for Carl? Okay, thank you very much, Carl. Commissioner, is there anyone else that wishes to testify on this bill this time? Commissioner and Director, can you come back up? We had some questions for you. Representative Samuels, did you have a question?
Yeah, there were statements during the testimony on, I forget the politics and the economics of it, but biologically speaking, escapement above and beyond what your goals are. Is there a biological problem? The example was, I think, in Skelak, but just generally speaking, are there biological problems with the over-escapement into Skelak Lake?
Through the chair, Doug Meekum. It depends on which system that you're. No, I object. It depends on the system that you're talking about. What you've seen in some of the lakes in the Kenai is when you've had, some time ago, remember the oil spill, the fisheries were closed and there were very large escapements and over a couple of years. And we did quite a bit of research on that and found that back-to-back large escapements into systems like that, which are what they call rearing limited, that is the amount of zooplankton that's available for the sockeye fry to feed upon the pasture that Mr. Blossom referred to, that back-to-back large escapements like that can create this brood-year interaction where the fish that are coming out of the first brood are eating all the food that's available, and the fish coming out of the second brood year don't have anything to eat and can lead to a depression in yield. Now, is that a conservation problem or is that an economics and yield problem? That's really the question. I'm not sure I would say go so far to say that it's threatening the sustained yield of the stock, but it certainly is resulting in a serious depression, can lead to a serious depression of yield and economic yield from that stock. And as you go around the state, different species and different systems, have different kinds of problems. But the one area that we've seen over escapement be the biggest problem is in these rearing limited sockeye systems where these fish are feeding on the zooplankton. There's only so much there, and large escapements can lead to a depression of yield.
And just okay. And the Cook Inlet areas, those are rearing limited.
Some are, yes.
Okay. Go ahead, Representative Sanders.
Thank you. So to combat that, the tools that you have, can you open the statement got made, I think, by one of the sport fish guys that you can open up, you can extend a season at the beginning. Can you open in the middle of the season? You know, we've got way too much escapement. We're going to have a problem. We need some fish caught. Can you open a commercial season for a short period of time? Or is that a board of fish? Is it just a procedural question for how it works?
Director Meekum?
Representative Samuels, well, I think what that speaker was referring to is his view, his own personal view, that there was more that could have been done within the constraints of the existing management plans that have been adopted by the Board of Fisheries to fish more aggressively early. And I would agree there's some other things that we could have done, but most of that is hindsight. But yeah, we have some flexibility to provide some additional openings. We're talking about that right now in our deliberative process within the department. How can we do better than what happened last year? Because nobody wants to see a bunch of fish not get harvested when all of the other goals and the plans are being met, whether they're allocation or conservation. So we do want to try to be more aggressive based on the forecast that we've got, and we've got some ideas on how we're going to do that.
Currently,
Representative Samuels,
you have the flexibility. I agreed that hindsight is great, but currently you do have some flexibility as the season progresses in the middle of the season to kind of change some of the parameters, both for sport and commercial. You have that flexibility now.
Well, we do have some flexibility. I think what the people that are pushing this legislation are concerned about is the reduction in some of the opportunity that they used to have to be able to harvest the more abundant sockeye. I mean, to put it in perspective, what we're really talking about under this bill is the reduction in the flexibility of the board to allocate. I mean, that's really first and foremost what it's doing. And what the board has done over the past 10, 15 years, particularly in Cook Inlet, as recreational users and personal use users and others, these fisheries have grown, is they've essentially truncated the commercial season. They have allocated the Chinook salmon up front, primarily for the benefit of recreational users, and they have allocated the coho on the tail end, primarily for the benefit of the recreational users, so that there's been a truncation of that season. That has forced the managers to try to fish more aggressively in the middle, and the board has subsequently come back and said, well, that's too aggressive. We want windows, and we want a little bit less effort in the middle. That's the balance, that's the trade-offs, that's the allocation decisions that the board makes.
And just to explain that a little further, is it used to be that the board had the local biologists had the ability to open it every day if they needed to take escapement. And yeah. And then it went to 2 days a week, and then the board has made a decision that during the peak of the season, basically for the red salmon commercial fishery, they have to lose at least one period, which is losing one of the 2 days per week. I mean, those are two 12-hour periods. So there's a large restriction on the ability of the local biologist and the commissioner to use the flexibility of management to harvest those stocks when they're there. And that's, I mean, just to be, have everybody understand, that's where this entire bill is coming from. That's where the push is that the Board of Fisheries has limited the flexibility of the department to harvest fish. I mean, somebody said 7 days a week. I mean, right now you can't even have 3 days a week. You know, which is where the problem is. And so that's the contention right now. And the problem is that the commercial fishery sees this limitation not in reflection of or in coordination with the biological return of the run. It's just a It's just you're going to lose so much time during the season, regardless of how many fish are. There could be 100 million fish come back. And if you followed the plan, they wouldn't be caught. I mean, because the commissioner, unless he goes outside of the fisheries management plan, doesn't have the flexibility. Yes. Director Meekham.
One clarification on that that I'd like to make is, and the commissioner referred to this earlier, is that we did take some actions that on their face were inconsistent with the some of the regulations that the Board of Fisheries had adopted. But that whole management plan for the Kenai River is built around sort of the 800-pound gorilla of the sockeye salmon escapement into the Kenai. And there's an abundance-based management program that essentially shoots for the managers to try to fall, the results of their actions should result in escapements that fall within a 500 to a million fish range, which is data that we have indicating that you can maintain high sustained yields within that range. And when last year during the course of the season we got into the sort of the peak, and it was clear to us, it was obvious to us that we were not going to be able to stay within that escapement goal range unless we took some action, we did take some action. And so one can argue you went outside of the plan. I would actually argue that we were trying to remain within the constraints of the plan, that we were trying to balance the various elements of the plan, some of which may compete. And that's what we did. And we actually came relatively close there because of the action that we took, and there were other systems that were not so close.
Yeah, Representative Guerra.
Thanks. My concern is this. I mean, you can't regulate perfectly because you don't know how many fish are going to come back. You can err on the side of overfishing, or you can err on the side of underfishing. And I think the department has properly erred on the side of underfishing to prevent the circumstance where you have an overtake and under escapement. But let me understand the Cook Inlet red fishery, for example. I mean, in general, I understand that you try and allow a certain escapement through before you increase fishing pressure to make sure that you have the guaranteed minimum escapement that you need. But even before we get the minimum escapement that we need, we've opened the red fishery, the red commercial fishery, a certain number of days a week. Is that correct? Even before you reach your minimum escapement?
Through the chair, Doug Meekham, Representative Guerra. I wouldn't characterize that as how we actually manage the fishery. We really have to take some chances on the front end. The forecast, as you are very well aware, we've had these discussions, are questionable sometimes, and so we have to be careful. But one of the ways that we can go out there and test that is to have some fishing. And we do that. We have test fishing, and we allow some limited openings before we get the minimum escapement. In essence, we try to implement a fishing schedule that's not going to cause us problems to go out there and see if our forecast is accurate. So that's why we would open the fishery up before we had so-called the minimum escapement guaranteed. It's not guaranteed, but our professional judgment is that we will get the minimum escapement with the fishing schedule we implement.
And just from that aspect, does this bill impose any dangers that you see that would get in the way of us achieving the minimum escapement early in the season in order to regulate the fishery properly?
Director Meekham.
Mr. Chair, Representative Guerra, I guess I'd have to agree with the Chairman Seaton and what the Commissioner Rozier had said. And I'm sure the commissioner agrees with me, is that this bill isn't really going to threaten salmon stocks. I think it's an overstatement to say that this bill is going to result in the extirpation of salmon stocks at the very least. It really is about allocation. I mean, it is about maintaining historic harvest shares and stability. I don't object to the notion, but I think it's probably a mistake to lock it down like this bill tries to do, and to remove that flexibility to allow the Board of Fisheries to change to differing economic conditions, resource conditions, socioeconomic considerations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't see this as causing any real problems, you know. It kind of depends, though, as Commissioner Rozier said, and how you end up implementing it. Trying to focus all your management on achieving MSY is what has got us to some extent into some of the battles that we're having in Cook Inlet right now. People feeling like that focus on the dominant stocks and MSY has led to impacts on their allocations of other fish that they haven't liked. Does it get it to the point where it's this bill would threaten resource conservation? I think that's a stretch. I think one thing that we did point out in our written testimony, however, was that it does raise an interesting question with respect to subsistence uses, because if you have this mandate to manage for subsistence, but then you would also have this mandate under this bill to manage for MSY, and I guess I would be concerned about the tension that's created there between those two statutes.
Okay. Well, we're running a little over time here, so unless there's a pressing question at this time, we'll look forward from the department for the sustainable fish policy, mixed stock policy. And what I would also like is to see if you could provide to the committee your thoughts on other avenues for achieving somewhat the purpose or the reasoning behind this bill. You understand fully what that reasoning is, the tension between to give yourselves or to for us to give, make sure that the flexibility is there to manage the stock so that we're not into over escapement problems. I don't know whether the missions and measures stuff, if that's adopted fully in this year, gives you that direction in statute more fully about managing within the goals, if there's any additional tools you need to do that. But we'd like your thoughts, you know, outside of the direct wording of this bill.
So I could respond, Chairman Seaton. I think in my testimony I talked a little bit about what I had recommended folks who would ask that specific question. So, and that was that there is a current structure in place where they can address some of the issues that they face that they feel are unfair to them, and that is through the board cycle, where there's a Cook Inlet meeting next February. But we can certainly discuss other options with you. But are you asking us to guess about all the intentions behind the drafting of this legislation and then for us to provide comments on that intent? I'm not sure we want to go down that road.
No, I'm not asking for that. The intention that I had laid out earlier as to what I thought was the reasoning for this bill is this problem of not being able to manage for, you know, within the ranges, and how do you get beyond, you know, at what point do you get beyond the management plan and that tension, and to see if we can come to some other ideas on that. I think that there's legitimate concerns there. I think we've heard that expression, and we've heard expression from both sides that management flexibility is a primary thing that needs to be there so that we can manage within manage our stocks and maintain sustained yield for the benefit of all citizens of the state. So that's what I would like you to address, if you have other ideas of ways to approach that.
Mr. Chairman, that's a reasonable request, and we'll give that some thought, and we'll get back with you.
Thank you. Is there any other comments just before we adjourn? Yes, Sir Representative Ogg.
I just have one comment. The direction of this bill, does the department and the board already have the authority to accomplish what these folks are driving for? Do you have the tools to do this? Not that you choose to use them, but do you have the tools to accomplish what these people are doing if that was a decision the board wanted to make?
Director Meacham?
I'd try to take a shot at it. I mean, you heard some testimony from people that said all this did was simply sort of pull all of the existing policies and regulations in one place and put them in statute. I'm not sure I agree with that. I agree with some of it. So that would kind of form the basis of my answer, is that certainly the Board of Fisheries has the authority to do all of the things that are contained herein, in that the Board of Fisheries is the ultimate management authority in the state. A lot of people don't like to hear that, and a lot of people don't even realize it, but that's what the legislature envisioned when they created the Board of Fisheries, that they had the ultimate decision-making authority with respect to conservation and also with allocation, and that the commissioner's authority with respect to allocation was very limited, almost non-existent. But they did give the commissioner the emergency powers when things are going to hell in a handbasket to do something about it. And that's what we call the discretionary emergency order authority. So does that answer your question?
That answers the major part of it. And just one more. You talked about the cycle. Next year is the Cook Inlet cycle. Does not the board also have, or do not people also have the ability to approach the board out of cycle if an issue is so important that they think that it's a problem and they'd like it addressed? Do they not have that authority?
Commissioner Duffy?
Yes, through the chair, Representative Ogg, there are agenda change requests, which is a process you can approach the board, and there's also emergency petitions. So they do have opportunity to approach the board in between cycles on issues. And then the board makes a determination.
And one follow-up to that. Did anybody who was there any approach to the board to ask that this particular philosophy be put before them out of cycle?
Through the chair, Representative Ogg, just one follow-up to what I said earlier. The agenda change requests actually come in the fall after the season as part of the board cycle, and I wanted to be clear on that. Doug, in terms of agenda change requests on this issue, I'll let Director Meacham answer.
Well, through the chair, Representative Ogg, it seems like every year, you know, Cook Inlet issues surface, and they have people have approached the Board of Fisheries, and the testifiers earlier are correct in that the board did reject the most recent agenda change requests that were submitted.
Okay, we'll adjourn this meeting at 11:10. Thank you for your attention.